On this week's episode of the We Don't Know Either podcast, host Andrew is here, but it may be a different Andrew from last week. We don't know. We're going to find out.
International Mandrew of Mystery.
I don't even have a way to do a shameless plug because that was so perfect and amazing. So anyway, get the book if you haven't gotten it yet. We Don't Know Either, available wherever great books are sold. You can send it to all your friends and family that aren't lucky enough to have trivia in the communities where they live. So get the We Don't Know Either book and enjoy the show. Hello, everybody, and welcome into episode number 367 of the We Don't Know Either podcast. I'm Lindsay.
I'm Michael.
I'm Bailey.
I'm Andrew.
Welcome, Bailey, Andrew, host extraordinaire. We got to ask, Andrew.
Both of them.
Yeah, both. Are you the same Andrew from the last 2 weeks?
To be determined. It's actually, no one's really sure who I am, so we'll find out.
Who am I?
It's a journey of self-discovery.
This is a very existentialist episode, so.
Yeah. So do you think you're going to stump us again?
So if I do stump you, then I'm a different Andrew, but if I don't stump you, then I'm the same one from last time, if that makes sense.
Definitely. I followed it, which concerns me. Bailey, what are you going to bring to this episode?
Just my charm and overall flowery demeanor.
What would you describe as your hosting style?
I don't know. I just kind of go with the feel. It also depends on how many beers I've had before the event.
Fair. All fair.
No, but in general, I just try to keep it fun. I mean, people are at the bar to have fun and learn a bunch of stuff they didn't know before. So I try to keep that in mind.
Yeah, I think those are all good things. By the way, we're hiring hosts. So if you want to apply, do that because it's a lot of fun.
And Portland, D.C., and Maryland.
Yeah, if these guys can do it, I mean, you definitely can.
Yeah, I'm kind of dumb and I can just read stuff. So that's all you really need.
Oh, okay. When I host, I can't read very well. I can't pronounce anything.
Can't read good.
Yeah, no, it's and sometimes I don't even, the words as I'm saying them out loud, I'm not processing what words I'm saying. Do you ever have that happen?
Definitely. Sometimes.
Yeah, and you're like, you could ask me a million times what the literal question I just asked was, and I have no idea. None whatsoever. But this just could be a me problem. Could be.
It is.
Yeah, we have nowhere to go for that except into Michael's fact.
Into my fact. Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Hit it.
So, one of my favorite places to go looking for facts is the Guinness Book of World Records for very obvious reasons. And I stumbled across what is the largest coin ever minted.
So are you looking for the size or what the coin was?
Well, I'll give you bits and pieces. It was minted from the Perth Mint in Australia.
Okay.
I want to know how much it weighs.
Ah, I see.
Wow. All right. What do you guys know about coin production?
There's a mint like a few miles from here.
Yeah, right.
That's about it.
Yeah.
It is 2 feet, 7.5 inches wide at the diameter, by the way.
2 feet, 7.5 inches at the diameter. Let's do math. What is it?
Honestly, that is not as big as I thought it would be. I mean, I guess.
The picture is pretty impressive.
I just was picturing, usually with the Guinness World Records, it's like a full warehouse coin is what I'm picturing. You know, like the world's longest burrito is a couple miles. So to only have a 2 foot coin seems weird.
I think the idea is that it's a legal tender coin. It is a coin that can be spent.
Oh, so it's not like a novelty coin.
No. This is a coin. This is a legal tender coin.
Interesting.
So do their vending machines have slots that are 2 feet, 7 inches?
I don't believe so.
You
can bring this, you and a couple friends can bring this to the bank.
Just roll it down the street. I just want a soda.
All right, so us and a couple of friends, that tells me this is not something that the weight is going to be more than something the average.
Well, I imagine it's probably made out of like a dense metal, right?
So it's made out of gold.
Oh, well,
99.99% gold.
Yeah, was it? That's going to be a big mamma jamba.
What? Made out of gold? What's the value of the coin? Like, if I brought this to a bank, what?
So this is what actually captured my interest of it. The face value of it is 1 million Australian dollars, which is roughly 990,000 US.
Interesting.
I think the amount of gold, and I'll double check this, the amount of gold used to it is actually far exceeds the face value of it.
It's kind of like how a penny is worth less than a penny.
Exactly.
Huh. Well, what do you think? How much does gold weigh? Would that be a very easy calculation to do.
I forgot my chemistry.
Yeah. I was like, you're the actual scientist here. Yeah.
I forgot how many grams per mole it was.
Yeah.
So I'm going to tender a guess and say. Oh, yeah, that's right. An unintentional pun.
The best types of puns are the unintentional ones.
Right.
Tender a guess. I love it.
Let's see. Are we going to use metric or international or American stupid units?
I will accept either because I have them both.
Oh, you have the conversion. Okay. I'm going to go with 1,000 kilograms, a metric ton.
Okay.
Okay, cool. Again, Bailey is a scientist, if, in case you couldn't tell by his love of the metric system and poo-pooing of the U.S., you know? Really got to cling to those random yards.
Here at the We Don't Know Either podcast do not advocate either type.
What are you talking about?
Are we very pro-metric on the podcast?
I'm all about Fahrenheit, but the rest, get rid of the rest.
Why Fahrenheit?
Because it has a better, you get more granularity in the temperatures.
Oh, obviously, the granularity.
Come on.
I'm a Kelvin man myself.
Oh, look at you. Yes. No negative temperatures for you.
I took AP Chem back in the day. What's up, Mr. Johnson?
I have no idea what's happening right now.
Cool. Okay, so that's a metric ton. I think that if it's that big and it's worth that much, you know, it has to have some weight to it, right? If you're going to spend this million Australian dollar coin.
If I could interrupt, actually, Bailey actually hit it pretty damn close. Oh! It's 1,012 kilograms.
Nailed it. Hell yeah.
Wow. I was sitting here thinking, I was like, we can let them guess. Bailey's hit it already, though.
Whoa, okay. Well, that's good because I was definitely going to not be anywhere close to that.
No, I wasn't going to be even remotely.
What would you have guessed?
I was going to guess 1,000 pounds.
So it comes out to 2,231 pounds.
So I was like 1,231 off.
It is. It also has a kangaroo on the front, which I think might be my favorite thing about it. It's a one-ton coin with a kangaroo.
Is it a life-size kangaroo? Oh, I guess it's only 2.5 feet, so no.
Maybe a baby kangaroo. I mean, here's the picture.
A Joey.
What was the purpose? Why did they mint this coin? Obviously, it's not something that, you know, is going
to
be used.
As to why, I'm not 100% sure. I think it was a promotional thing. Oh, here it is. It was was created to promote Australia's official kangaroo bullion coin series. So they made normal size coins. And as part of the advertising, I guess, for that, they were like, let's make a big freaking coin.
So they spent $3 million to make a $1 million coin for advertising, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. All right. Well done, Michael. That's super interesting. Say again the weight of it for everybody that's listening.
So we'll accept it in both pounds or kilograms, so I'll have them both listed. But 2,231 pounds or 1,012 kilograms.
Awesome. Well, I actually have a good segue, if you guys don't mind.
Please.
Yeah, so you're talking about money, and you can earn money for prizes, right? If you play a sport or a competition, you can win money. And we certainly give away money for our Tournament of Champions, and you can win a lot of cash, right? Shameless plug. But you can also win some cash money playing cornhole.
Oh,
really?
Can we?
Yeah. The American Cornhole League is on ESPN now.
I've seen that.
I literally was watching this last night. So.
It is oddly captivating.
Sorry,
right?
I might have to recuse myself from this question.
They are so good at it. It's ridiculous. It's like watching darts.
Yeah, and they give away, I think they're up to almost $1 million a year in prize money. And they, you know, obviously this is spread out over a lot of women's doubles and men's doubles and a bunch of words related to cornhole that I didn't know or understand. Stand and didn't have time to research more thoroughly. But anyway, I found this guy named Cody Henderson. He was the 2018 Player of the Year. There's a great video of him sinking 19 straight shots. Whoa. That's pretty impressive.
Like in a game or is this
in
just
a match?
Okay.
Yeah, 19 straight shots. It's not his full-time gig. He's won, you know, he wins a couple thousand a year. He said he's won up to like 30,000 a year. He's still climbing in that. He's a warehouse manager in Ohio. But I asked, well, I didn't ask him. I read an article, and I'm asking you, how many hours a week of training does Cody Henderson do as a professional cornhole player? With another job. He's got another job.
Just to be clear, by training you mean drink like Bud Light and throw bean bags into.
So you very clearly wasn't watching the podcast. They all drink water. They are sharp. These
really?
Are athletes.
Oh my
not
goodness.
Really, but these are athletes.
I will, for the record, I do think that cornhole is a sport.
Absolutely.
I've done bowling throughout most of my life, as I've mentioned on the podcast, not recently, last 10 years, but growing up in high school and did it in college for a little while. So I definitely think that there's something to be said about keeping your body physically in shape, ready to go. And some of these tournaments will go 12 hours in the hot sun, and you have to be very physically demanding. So
I want to see the training montage for cornhole.
Oh, my gosh. It'd be so much fun.
It sounds like epic.
Yeah, I also think that they should have a whole thing where somebody is throwing other things at you while you're trying to throw.
I think that's a dodgeball.
Yeah, or if you're throwing it and you can throw another beanbag out of the air and hit that beanbag in the air, I think that you should be allowed to play a little bit of defense.
I think that's in the new Matrix movie. They're going to do that.
I hope so.
They're making another Matrix movie?
Yeah, they are, oddly enough.
Okay, so the question was how many hours a week?
Yeah, how many hours a week of training? Good, you guys got to talk out loud. It's
all right, so he works, you said he works at a warehouse.
Yep, he's a warehouse manager. This was as of 2018. Could not find a recent update of Cody. What's up?
Dunder Mifflin, Ohio.
Yeah.
All right, so let's say he's working 9 to 5, yep. Monday through Friday. So that's 40 hours that he's not training. He's probably training a lot on the weekends, probably spending a lot of Saturday training.
I don't know. If it's in season, I would think Friday, Saturday, Sunday, those are travel days. Travel and tournament days. So that's
tournaments,
not...
they're the weekend.
Good,
yeah.
Good call there. So we're thinking he's training after or before.
I'm going to say 8 hours a week. I'm thinking Monday through Thursday, 2 hours. He's got the warehouse, so he's got the space. You just stay after and throw the bags around. 8 hours is what I'm going
8 hours? Okay. I'll see your 8 hours. I'm going to say 12.79 hours.
12.79, okay.
I'm going way up.
What does that come down to in minutes?
I don't know.
Yeah. I think that is a Cody. Cody, is that his name? I think Cody is spending 20 hours a week training.
4 hours a day, 5 days a week.
I think that he gets some Sunday night time in after the tournament.
Okay.
After kids go to bed, he just goes out back and just grooves a shot.
Yep, 20 hours is my guess.
Okay.
One of you has hit it right on the head.
It's 12.79, isn't it?
It's got to be. At that 43-second mark, he's like, I'm done.
It is not.
Ah, dang it.
Andrew, 20 hours a week.
All
spot
right.
On.
Very nice.
Way to go.
Well done, yeah.
My guy, Cody.
Which is why I'm not a professional cornhole athlete. Apparently, I'm not putting in the time.
I don't know what the training entails. I'm sure that it's a lot of like practice shots, and it's a lot about endurance and making sure, but... You know, we'll try to talk to Cody, see what's going on in his life.
Yeah.
See if he's still cornholing up. They just re-signed the deal with ESPN, so cornhole will be around for a while.
All right.
Last thing, and a shameless plug for ESPN. They're not paying us, but they should be. They had something on last night at midnight called Slippery Stairs.
I've seen these.
Yeah, so it was a Japanese game show that recently, I guess, came to ESPN, and we'll put the link in the link dump. And so make sure you check it out, because it's probably the greatest thing I've ever seen.
Sounds very intriguing.
Yes. Okay, so who's got a segue from cornhole /slippery stairs/sports prize money? Come on, guys.
By the way, slippery stairs is exactly what you think it is.
Is it really? Oh, my goodness.
I think that we should make that our secret phrase.
Absolutely.
Slippery stairs.
Slippery stairs. It's a slippery slope into learning stuff when you listen to this episode. So slippery stairs is going to be your secret phrase. What's that secret phrase, Andrew?
Slippery stairs.
And Bailey, what's that phrase?
Slippery stairs.
Slippery stairs is
slippery stairs.
The secret phrase. Okay, so one of you got to go with your fact.
I mean, not really a good transition at all here, but my question is, which iconic American company accidentally discovered that the United States was conducting nuclear testing in 1945?
Okay, say it again for us.
Sure. Which iconic American company accidentally discovered that the United States was conducting nuclear testing in 1945?
Iconic, eh?
Okay. Michael, what do you think of when you think of iconic American company?
Coca-Cola immediately comes to mind. I don't care that Pepsi sponsors the halftime show at the Super Bowl. Coca-Cola is what this country drinks. When was the last time you were at a restaurant and somebody's like, can I get a Pepsi? No, you order a Coke.
I order Pepsi. I love Pepsi. I know. I'm such a rebel.
I like root beer, but that's neither here nor there.
Levi's immediately comes to mind, kind of if you want that iconic American.
Yeah. Well, I'm just trying to think out loud as to how would a company discover that America was nuclear testing?
I'm trying to think of like an airline, maybe like a Pan Am. Maybe they were just flying over like Alamogordo or something like that. And they're like, oh, what's that weird flash? Oh, my God, I'm blind.
Yeah. Which is a bad place to be if you're a pilot.
Yeah, I would imagine.
And
you would hope that, you know, the Air Force clear the airspace around that area.
Yeah, you would think. Okay, so follow-up questions. Is this company still around today?
Very much so.
Oh.
Ooh, okay, that changes my answer.
Okay. Yeah, no Pan Am then.
No Pan Am.
R.I.P. Pan Am.
Yeah, but.
Yeah, I was going to guess Sears.
Sears is still around.
Yeah, but they're not. I thought they just declared bankruptcy.
Yeah, I think they did recently.
Well,
yeah.
If it's Chapter 11, they may stay in business. There's a difference between Chapter 7, where you sell all your assets, and Chapter 11, where you make a deal with your creditors to stay in business.
This is also a financial advice podcast.
I'd like to thank my business law professor from Orange Coast College. I double-checked with her the other day.
Confer with Michael if you want to get financing for a $1 million Australian coin.
Absolutely.
Also, Michael, you could just be a professional cornhole agent with the way you're talking right now. You can negotiate all those contracts and deals out.
I'd assume there are a fair amount of cornhole athletes that need to declare bankruptcy. So,
no. They got a lot of prize money to be won. You just got to train more than 20 hours a week. We've established this. Okay, again, we're doing that thing where we deflect from trying to actually answer the question. I was going to say Sears. The reason I was going to choose Sears was because they had a lot of orders for refrigerators because a lot of people near the testing sites needed to protect their families. So Sears was going to send them all the refrigerators that they needed.
The lead-based.
It's a good Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull reference there.
I was just about to say that. I was thinking the exact same thing.
Watch that movie.
It doesn't really exist.
Well, if you want to know how to survive a nuclear test. I mean,
there's got to be better movies. There just has to be.
For the record, I'm not defending Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, except I was very I am defending it now. I was very pro the democracy fighting monkeys. They were pro democracy, but they're fighting for it and they were helping Shyla. Anyway, okay, so I'm going to say Sears. I'm going to stick with it, even though I can see by your face that it's wrong.
I have to change my guess now that it's a no longer defunct company.
I'm going to say Levi's.
Levi's? Okay.
Here's what I'm thinking is it takes a fair amount of water to dye the jeans. And my thought is maybe there's some sort of nuclear runoff that, I don't know, made the jeans glow or something silly like that. But something in the water, they went, wait a minute. And that's how they stumbled on the nuclear test.
Makes sense. I don't know. I'm going to go with like 3M since they were a mining company to start.
Oh, there's a good one.
Like a Ford or somebody was driving around, I feel like. I mean, not that they would be driving near a nuclear test site, but I feel like that company's been around for so long.
Plus, they didn't really know what it was at the time.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, is this safe? I'm just going to drive around here.
Are we even anywhere?
These are all good guesses, and I think your rationales make sense, but you're all wrong. The answer is going to strike you as sort of obvious as soon as I say it. The answer is Kodak.
Kodak.
Oh.
Somebody, I guess, had to develop that film, didn't they?
So Kodak, in their packaging, had made it basically resistant to natural radiation. But they started getting a bunch of damaged goods come in because there was, you know, man-made radiation that was ruining the packaging around the film. From water that had nuclear runoff in it. So the Levi's guess, you had the right idea.
Okay.
But yes, Kodak was the answer.
I like that.
So what happened when they discovered that this testing was going on?
So they didn't immediately know that, you know, they knew that something was really weird and wrong. It took them a few years to figure out that they had, like, pretty much, I mean, they put two and two together, and as more came out about the nuclear program, they were like, oh, we accidentally discovered that nuclear testing was going on.
I was going to say, did they realize this before or after the bombs were dropped?
So I think officially they realized it, or at least they released their realization of it afterwards.
Mm. They probably didn't want to get on the government's radar.
Right.
Probably.
We have top secret information, haha. Yeah. That's not a good idea.
Yeah, it's not something to really publish about. So. Cool. Kodak. Interesting.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Andrew. You stumped us, so it's this Andrew continuation.
All right. 10 points to Gryffindor.
Yeah. All right, Bailey, what do you got?
All right. So I'm going to go with a civics-related question.
Okay.
All right, so here we go. How many constitutional amendments have been submitted to the states for ratification?
Total.
At least 27.
Yes, at least 27, so you got that much at least.
That is my answer. Yeah. At least 27, that's technically correct.
Greater than or equal to.
Yeah. Okay. So I feel like I'm not super familiar with the actual amendment submitting process, and obviously all of them don't make it to a vote. But I would imagine they probably would get submitted pretty frequently.
Oh, yeah, there's literally hundreds that get submitted, but only a few get approved by Congress, and then they go out to the states to get voted on. There has to be, I can't remember what the majority is, two-thirds, I think.
Two-thirds majority to clear an amendment?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it has to be the states that ratify it. So
maybe
it's not
three-quarters.
I don't remember off the top of my head. Sorry, Mrs. Putnam.
So is the Equal Rights Amendment, I think that is still in the process of being ratified by states.
That is one of them.
So that, I think that's one that hasn't made the cut yet.
Mm-hmm. We just talked about that the other week. Last week, Nick's fact, the 13th Amendment was just passed by Mississippi. So,
yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
Took them long enough.
Yeah.
So, all right. So we have. So that gives us at least what? So we're at minimum 28 now.
It is two-thirds.
It is two-thirds?
It is
okay.
Two-thirds to clear House and Congress and House and Senate.
Nice.
So I feel like there were probably a bunch that, like in the 19th century, that got approved but didn't maybe get ratified. I feel like I haven't heard of any. I feel like you don't really hear about them too much anymore.
Sure.
But maybe they were a little more.
Maybe during communism and stuff.
Like, during communism.
Well, I'm thinking about, exactly what I was thinking of. You know, Hollywood 10, stuff like that.
I would imagine there would be a lot also early on where, everybody came together, they passed this Constitution, you know, the Bill of Rights was the compromise. I feel like a lot early on would want to be like, hey, we want to add these things that we didn't get the first time to go around. But that does not give me any indication as to what that total number would be.
And I think the barrier of entry to that is also getting two-thirds of Congress to agree to literally anything.
It has to be approved by Congress first, and then it goes to the states. Correct.
So, but these are specifically amendments that went to the states. So
correct.
They did clear Congress.
They did clear. They have to go to Congress first, and then they go to the states. So they did, yeah.
Okay. I'm going to say, so we obviously, I joked about it, but it's more than 27.
Yes, obviously, yeah.
But I don't think it's higher than 40, so I'm going to say like 35.
Okay.
35, cool.
I was going to say 35 as well, so I'll price is right you here and go with 34.
I'm going to go higher than that. Because why would this fact be interesting? And so I think that it was probably 100. I'm going to say 100. Yeah.
So because Andrew Price is right you, he got it. There's 33.
Yes.
33. There were six that still remain unratified. One of them was the Equal Rights Amendment, which is its status. Supposedly, it expired. The ratification time expired, but now they're being challenged. I think that's one of the things being spearheaded by, I think, Pelosi or maybe Liz Warren. And there's also the D.C. Voting Rights Amendment that is yet to be ratified. Yeah. There was the Child Labor Amendment. That was supposed to outlaw child labor, but that's sort of overcome by events. There was the titles of nobility. So anybody who had a title of nobility from a foreign country would have been stripped of their citizenship.
That sounds like one of those early.
Yeah, that was one
early
of ones.
America ones.
Yeah, I think that was like right after the Constitutional Convention. They proposed that and they were like, no, that's stupid. Probably because some of them had them. there was also the Congressional Apportionment Amendment that was supposed to say there was one representative for every 30,000 people, ramping up to 50,000. And then there was the Corwin Amendment, which was basically it would have prevented the federal government from outlawing or abolishing any domestic institutions, read slavery specifically. It happened right before the Civil War kicked off. So it was one of those things that they were trying to use to appease the southern states, trying to say, oh, you can sort of keep slavery around, but then obviously would have prevented the 13th Amendment from passing. So there you go. Those are your six unratified amendments.
Six unratified amendments. I also feel like an idiot because Nick was talking about the 13th Amendment last week and not the Equal Rights Amendment, and they're very different things. So my bad.
All good.
What did I say about not understanding words sometimes? Again, just trying to be relatable for those at home listening. Cool. Well, we got our secret phrase. We got all our interesting facts. We'll be sure to ask those at your trivia events. So I think we got to wrap up this episode, guys. This has been the We Don't Know Either podcast. I'm Lindsay.
I'm Michael.
I'm Bailey.
I'm Andrew.
And we don't know either.
Bye.
Bye-bye.